Nico hits a bouncer right back to the mound. Romano grabs it, throws to first. Ball game over. The Phillies, in 10 innings, beat the Cubs by a score of 3-1 here at Wrigley in the series finale.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully today, and we've been talking a lot of football. We're going to talk Cubs baseball for a moment, and White Sox, too. They're back home on the South Side. They host the Milwaukee Brewers tonight at 640. The Cubs out in Pittsburgh. You've got Shota Imanaga back on the hill against Andrew Haney, and the Cubs right here on the Score. 5:05 pregame with Zach, and then first pitch after that. I don't want to be worried about the Cubs at 17-12. I don't want to panic over losing a series to the Phillies, but I do have concerns, and I do have concerns rooted in the question at third base. That's where things start, and as a 630 texter points out, DH, if John Birdie is your answer for third base, I don't know. I don't want to know the question. Once again, Jed and Carter having a gaping hole in the roster construction. Pathetic. I wouldn't go that far. I'm not calling anybody pathetic. The Cubs are far from pathetic. But I do think that with Matt Shaw struggling mightily now at AAA and struggling miserably at the major league level, what the Cubs do at third base now is to me as big of a concern as any in that roster. They have a starting pitching issue with Justin Steele out for the season. We know about that. The bullpen is shaky, really shaky. But I still think the third base committee not getting it done.
That's certainly the biggest concern. It's an important position, and it's cost the Cubs runs that they've given up. And you don't really know what are the options. Where do you go from here? How do you seek? Can you seek outside help? And
nobody wants to trade.
No one wants to give up a third. Right.
Nobody wants to make big trades
right
this early in the season. It's rare that happens. Last year, about this time, have to look up exactly when, but Luis Arraez went from the Marlins to the Padres.
Yeah.
And that was an in-season, early season trade. And I think that you look at the Cubs' urgency, and they've got to feel it. Because Vidal Brujan made a play that Craig Counsell called out after the game. Trey Turner was running. The bases were loaded. We saw what happened. They lost in 10 innings, and that was not the way to attack a ground ball. John Birdie is an option. He gives you speed on the base paths, but is he really an everyday option, or is he just a good depth piece? You'd like to bring him off the bench. You have, I guess, Justin Turner there as well. And they don't have great options at third base. They can definitely make a move. They're waiting for Matt Shaw to get better. I don't know that that's realistic now to – it's not going to happen anytime soon. So you got to go try to be aggressive, and you got to go try to make a deal. 815, go get Arenado right now. Not as easy as it sounds.
Make the trade, David. You didn't read the best part. Make the trade, David and Ruthie. Yeah, let me get on the phone.
Get right on that. So I think you wonder about what is out there. You wonder about what direction the Cubs will go. Gage Workman was DFA'd and picked up by the White Sox, and now he's committed to beating the Cubs.
Love it.
Will he be in the lineup
Dustin
tonight for the White
not.
Sox?
Yeah. Who you got?
Well, they have got to try a little bit of everything if they want to get some offense generated on the South Side. So
you don't pick him up if he's not going to contribute.
Gage Workman possibly playing for the Sox in the Sox lineup tonight. Tim Elko, minor league first baseman who has has 5 home runs since Thursday, 9 in 23 games for the Charlotte Knights. I don't know what he's doing still at AAA.
It's criminal.
I don't know that it's criminal.
Arrest him.
It seems like it's negligent, not criminal.
No.
There's a big difference.
Why not? Is there something we don't know? Could he get called up today?
Possibly. I mean, the Sox have to try different things to generate runs. Their pitching has been the strength of this team. They don't have a lot of strength. What's been interesting is Sacramento, when they played the A's, Will Venable went to the opener for that series. And I wonder what happens tonight. Bryce Wilson is the listed starter. I don't know if that's going to be a bullpen game or Bryce Wilson will be somebody that they tried to look at in the traditional, conventional starting sense. Going to an opener is something a team in the Sox situation they can try. Brian Bannister explained it over the weekend. I think that's going to be something they'd go to at times. I'm not sure. It seemed to work with Jonathan Cannon, who gave him 7 2/3, but I don't know that you want to go too far into a season and still using the opener as often as the Sox did over the weekend.
Yeah.
That's unorthodox.
Yeah. I think everything about what's going on with the White Sox is a little unorthodox, just because it does feel like it's a little trial and error. Get guys going. Oh, that didn't work. Let's take them out. Like, it's just sort of you swing and you hope to hit the ball, and you're not doing that in a lot of ways.
312-644-6767. Call or text. What should the Cubs do about the third base situation? And do you like the White Sox idea of using an opener? 847 texts in. Interesting possibility here.
Mm.
Michael Busch to third base, Moises Ballesteros to first. Interesting possibility. That would be dipping into Iowa for a guy in Ballesteros who is a prospect who can hit. I don't know if Michael Busch could play third base, but I don't think he would be much worse defensively than what they have had so far. Michael Busch off to a very good start offensively. Justin Turner is an option, but I don't know that you want to play him more than a couple times a week. Let's go out to the phone lines. Our buddy Kevin is in Palatine. Good morning, Kevin. Welcome to Mullane Haw.
Hey, good morning, guys. I think John Birdie is the best of a bad option for now. I would give him a week's run because, unlike the great Gage Workman, John Birdie learned what we learned the first day at Little League. Put your glove on the ground. The fact that this guy said he can't wait to beat the Cubs, dude, put your glove on the ground. Yeah, like, you're horrible. That's just hilarious to me. But you guys asked on the pick six, who needs to step up? Here's who I'd like to step up. The $8 million man in the dugout. I don't care after the fact that you saw that Vidal Brujan was playing short left like it's a Sunday afternoon softball league. Why didn't the $8 million man go out and stop it ahead of time when the fastest guy in the league was up to bat? I don't want to hear the after the fact. We all saw it after the fact. You get paid $8 million to stop it ahead of time. Here's the other thing with him. I know Brent Brown had a bad inning the other day. Once again, Ian Happ failed to catch an easy pop-up because he didn't call off the guys in front of him. That contributed to those six runs. But the great $8 million man neglected to talk about that. But his Vidal Brujan, after the body is called dead to tell us afterwards he should have done better, do it ahead of time. Don't be a potted plant. Thanks, guys.
Kevin from Palatine.
Kevin, awesome call.
Always delivers. Dustin is pumping his fist. What?
The way he says Brujan. He said Brujan. He was so mad.
Wait. Let me understand this correctly, though. And we love Kevin's contributions to the show. It's Craig Counsell's fault that Vidal Brujan backed up on a ground ball that every major league infielder knows you cannot do that when you have Trey Turner running? That's Craig Counsell's fault?
No. But it's where he was positioned. He was positioned basically an inch from the grass. Like, move up a little bit. Why you're playing like you're willing to allow the run to score. Why would you be playing that way? It's the 10th inning. So you can't set him up for defense there. And if you notice it, if you didn't want him there, hello, stop being a potted plant.
He's not a potted plant. That's unfair. Craig Counsell's had a better season this year, off to a better start than last year. The moves have been more obvious. And I think you look at – stop with your golf clap. Stop with the golf clap. Craig Counsell has pushed some of the right buttons.
Score, good morning. Who's this?
Oh, wait, hey, hold on. Turn your mic off. For good. Look, he's not a potted plant. Brujan was in the game because the Cubs have issues at third base. I thought Kevin was going to go in the direction when he was throwing flames at the flamethrower at the front office for putting the Cubs in this situation of not having a viable third base option, because they really don't.
Right.
I love the creativity of the texters. You know, Amaya to first base, Busch to third. And then obviously people are worried about Michael Busch moving from first base, say, why would you move a potential Gold Glove from first to third for an organization that is normally patient with prospects? I think that's a good point too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an ideal situation. And are you nitpicking about a team that is in first place? Absolutely. You know why? Because they're good enough to win the pennant. They're good enough to win the pennant with the right moves. That should be the goal. That should be the standard. So if we're nitpicking about the Cubs, yes, they're at that stage of their – this is an organization that's what we should expect after being 5 years without a playoff appearance. You should expect them to be in a position to not have a hole in their lineup as big as the one at third base and have a shortstop that can hit a little bit, as you called out Dansby Swanson this morning.
I did not call him. You asked the question. I answered. All I did was read the stat line. Hold on. Trade Suzuki, 847. Trade Suzuki to Boston for Rafael Devers and promote Moises Ballesteros to DH.
Wow. Well, that's creative. I don't think they're going to be doing that.
Suzuki for Devers is not a one for one.
No, I think Devers, but that contract is be massive.
Massive.
You're not going to be affording Kyle Tucker if you get Rafael
Devers. Wants to play third, though.
He does want to play third. I suppose that he might be trade bait, but I don't think you're going to be doing that if you're the Cubs.
Right.
I just don't think that's realistic.
I like the creativity.
815, Bruhan mistake never happens if Merriweather throws strikes instead of walking the world with the wind blowing in 25 miles per hour. Unacceptable. Good point. Bullpen, again, depending on the day, the bullpen or third base could be the biggest problem on this team. But both are issues that they're going to have to address in a meaningful way to feel better about the Cubs' ability, not just to win the division, but to do something and make some noise in October. It's a long season. It's a long time before the trade deadline. We don't need to be talking about those possibilities just yet, but these are worthy concerns for a team that has high expectations. Let's go back to the phone lines. Bill is on Lakeshore Drive. Bill, welcome to Mullen Haw.
Thanks, guys. Hey, I just wanted to bring up what you guys were talking about with Dansby Swanson. You know, my biggest concern is this isn't a one-month slump. You know, it's basically been, I think he's hitting about 230 with about a 660, 670 OPS since he's been with the Cubs. It's two years and a month. You know, at what point is this seven-year contract going to be the third straight deal that the team is Soriano, Hayward, Swanson? It just doesn't work out. And when do you like, obviously love his defense, love his leadership, but at a certain point, you can't put a guy in the lineup who's hitting 180 every day. Everyone wants to knock Matt Shaw. He was hitting about 180. They sent him down. So I understand he plays a premium position, but like at a certain point, right, like why are we batting Dansby Swanson fifth? Like wouldn't you want to minimize his at-bats until he comes out of the slump? I don't know. Maybe I'm not a math major, but that's my take on it. And I just it's really frustrating that as a Cub fan you get excited when they really spend big money, right? They're spending a lot of money, $27 million.
Yeah, Bill
Swanson every year, and they're just not getting a return right now. And frankly, they haven't for two years.
It's a good call. I don't think you have to be a math major to know that is the one criticism of Craig Counsell that I think is legitimate. We are lineupistas, as they say, and every lineup that includes Dansby Swanson and a sub-200 batting average hitting fifth is a bad lineup, is a flawed lineup. Move them down.
Mm-hmm.
Move them down. If you don't want to move PCA up too far, okay, bat your catcher fifth. Your catching position is as powerful and productive as any in baseball for the first month of the season. Bat your catcher fifth. Keep PCA seventh. If you like the way that your order comes together because of that, okay. But Dansby Swanson has no business with his light torpedo bat hitting fifth in the order. Not with that average, not with that lack of pop.
It's an opportunity to try something new when you talked about it, the urgency. And you talked about the urgency a little bit. Does any of that contribute to, obviously you just said it, we're a month into the season. Does any of it contribute watching the Reds kind of just...
Ooh, they're coming in hot. They won five in a row. Don't think that's insignificant. That's a great point. You know, the Cardinals are leveling off. The Brewers, don't sleep on them. They're on the south side tonight. Murphy's got that team playing as well as getting the most out of that potential and that roster. They're going to be there for the duration. But the Reds are the new team to enter the chat, as they say. The Reds have entered the chat. Yes, the kids say that. And Terry Francona has the kids playing at a high level. I would not sleep on the Reds because already they look more dangerous than you would like them to look. And yeah, is this, you know, people can say you're complaining about a team that's in first place and has gone through the teeth of the schedule successfully. But I'll remind you, a year ago, we were sitting here, different circumstances with the schedule, but feeling pretty good about the Cubs getting to Craig Tober. And they were probably had 17 victories in April as well. They started 17-10, I think. And then everything fell apart in May. The wheels fell off. The offense was broken. And we know what happened after that. So nitpicking is appropriate for a team that should have National League NLCS aspirations. Not apologizing for that.
And you want to, you got out to a hot start. You want to keep that up as you, so that when you do maybe hit a slump, you're then not digging yourself out of that hole and the tail end of the season. Like, now is the time
now is
to
the
win
time.
A lot of games.
Now is the time. You cannot win a pennant or a division in April, but you can lose it, as Steve Stone has reminded us on many occasions. Let's go back to the phone lines. Jack is on the Odyssey app with a thought on Gage Workman. Morning, Jack. Go ahead, Jack.
I think when a man gets drafted from a team, he always wants to beat that team. It's like he hurt your guys' feelings. I feel bad for you guys.
It's not me. Don't throw me in that.
I feel bad for you. I think you have to get your dream job at Marquee. Like, you should leave the Score.
No, I'm not leaving the Score. No, don't start that rumor. No, I'm not leaving. Sorry, Jack. I'm here for a while.
If you got the chance, you'd be gone in a minute.
to go work at the Cub station?
yeah, I know. You might as well admit it. That's good. But I enjoy your show. I know you guys, most of you are all Cub fans. And I'm too bad. I got Jerry Reinsdorf. I'm a White Sox fan. Been White Sox fan since 59.
Oh, that's great loyalty, Jack. And enjoy Gage Workman. He'll probably be in the lineup tonight. And I hope that he plays well for the Sox.
Yeah.
He's a prospect. He had a great spring training. I don't know if you heard.
That was a great call, Jack.
But he had a great spring training. Thank you, Jack. Yeah, I'm not going to Marquee. I love good people.
We're
going to
be on the South Side tonight.
We're going to be at the Rate.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we are going to be 35th and Shields. We're going to do the big pro football show from the Rate. Football show at a baseball park.
The new uniforms?
I hope not. They're not wearing those tonight,
no,
are they?
No, when do they wear them?
Do we know when they're wearing the city?
We should know this.
Usually, isn't it Friday? Isn't it?
Yeah,
Friday?
The Fridays.
Yeah.
Yeah, but come on.
Is that only the Cubs who do that?
The Red Sox?
I'm the one who wants to work at Marquee, supposedly, right?
Dustin does.
I'm good here at the Score too. Thank you.
Dustin does want to work
at Marquee.
It is a Cubs flagship station. We're talking
this is
Cubs.
The Cubs station.
They plan to wear those jerseys Friday, May 2nd.
I'll be out of town. Thank goodness.
I can look away.
Derby day.
That's not Derby
I
day.
Like. I is think it? I like them. I don't know.
You like the Red?
It's Oaks Day.
Okay, it's Oaks Day on Friday.
I understand. I think I get what they're trying to do.
What are they trying to do?
Well, there was something about the shared legacy between the Bulls and the White Sox.
The shared ownership group, right?
That's great. People know that the shared ownership group. They know the Reinsdorfs own both teams, but the going to the red jersey.
I know, it's like the Red Sox.
It seems like the Red Sox. It also
no, but the
like,
Red Sox, their city connect is yellow.
No,
and blue,
I'm just saying
right?
It's like the jersey's red.
I'm not getting it. I'm not getting the whole thing because the Sox had the best uniform in baseball.
Best uniform in baseball. I said this last night to my husband. I said, we were actually talking about this like last week. And I was like, the White Sox just have the best uniform. It's the best uniform.
And now they have the best softball uniforms in baseball.
I know.
Because it looked like that's
the city uniforms are tough. I don't really understand the initiative in general, like
Moolah.
For any team.
Moolah.
Right. Well,
it's a big money maker. That's why. Yeah. All right. Going back to the Bears when we come back. Dan Wiederer from the Take the North podcast and the Chicago Tribune. He's going to tell us about these new bracelets they're giving out, the Take the North bracelets. I leave the podcast and they get merchandise.
What?
How does that work? Dan Wiederer joins us next. It's Mully and Haw with Ruthie in for Mully. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Dan Wiederer.
You've got a guy with credentials, you got a guy with some qualifications, and now there's just when
done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully today. And we go out to the Score hotline brought to you by Aturo Tire. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Dan Wiederer covers the Bears for the Chicago Tribune and, of course, works at the does the Take the North podcast with Mark Grody and has these cool wristbands that they're giving out now that they have merchandise. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, we're exploding now, David. We're deep into the merch industry.
Yeah, I know. I'm gone. And
David leaves and you guys get merch.
T-shirts and sweatshirts and wristbands. All right, let's talk about the Bears because I think we talked to Bill O'Brien last hour, Dan, and it was an interesting conversation because, number one, we learned that Ben Johnson's college roommate was on his staff.
He's the offensive coordinator for BC.
And vouched for Ozzie Trapillo, did not realize that. And also, he described ways that he believes Ozzie Trapillo can make an impact early and has confidence in, sounded like, either side of the line of scrimmage. Just wondered, not necessarily after hearing Bill O'Brien's take on it, but what do you expect from Ozzie Trapillo, second-round draft pick?
Well, listen, what you just said there at the end is important. This is a second-round draft pick. This isn't a dice roll on a day three flyer. This is a guy that you drafted at a place on the board where he should become a starter for you, where he should become an impact contributor for you. And in the best-case scenario, he becomes a second contract guy that is a starter on your offensive line for a long time. This isn't just a second round. You just throw a dart at the board and hope that it works out. You do those and you make those picks because you have belief. The word that kept coming up with Ozzie Trapillo was dependability, that this guy is really smart. He doesn't get himself in a lot of trouble. He doesn't commit a lot of penalties. And he's going to be, you know, tough and durable and sturdy for you. So now what the Bears have to do in May and into early June is figure out how much experimenting they want to do and where they want to do it. And as you know, you heard Ryan Poles before the draft and again afterwards say that he was open to testing Darnell Wright on the left side, something that Darnell did at Tennessee. And so that experiment will be part of it. And then I think probably ideally, if you're doing this with an eye on stability for training camp, you want to get through some of the mixing and matching as soon as possible. So whether that's at the end of mini camp or in the first week of training camp, I think you want to hit August with a sense of these are our five starters and we don't want to be shuffling through the entire preseason.
It's going to give you a little bit of more. Ozzie's going to get a lot of reps, right? Like Ben said that he's going to get a lot of reps because Braxton's out. I'm just curious, is the spring the time to sort of work those things out? Because we know when Braxton's back, he's going to play left tackle. Do you see what I'm saying? Like the puzzle pieces may, you know what I mean? Like the puzzle pieces maybe now is the best time to do it in the spring. Obviously, it's hard to say without pads on and all those things. But
that's it. Yeah. So that's the other wrinkle in the equation is most of the O-line evaluations are difficult to get a true picture on until the pads come on. And so they find themselves in a little bit of a pickle trying to project and guess and trust what they're seeing with their eyes before they're actually playing real football up front. But you do have to feel out comfort. You do have to feel out footwork. You do have to feel out kind of how that whole group together is gelling. And you got to make a pretty good decision to try to get yourself set up for success with an offense that should have every reason to believe it can be successful in 2025.
Dan, when I look at draft classes, I try to project who could be a starter on a playoff team. And this year, when you look at the Bears and when they could possibly return to the playoffs, conceivably it's in the next could happen next year, but likely in the next 2 years and better be in the next three or else they're doing wrong.
Yeah.
When you look at this class of 2025, how many starters do you see that are guys you could project as being starters on a playoff team?
First of all, if they haven't made a playoff appearance by the end of 2026, then you might have to take all my Take the North merch and give it somewhere else because I don't know that I can stick in on that roller coaster
much
longer.
We're going to give back the North. We'll give it back. Give back the North.
It's been given back for a long time. They got to get to the point of taking here. But to your point, David, obviously, Loveland, your first pick, you would expect to be a blue chipper. I mean, Burden definitely has the talent to be. You've got to just figure out a way to develop him, manage him, figure out what is going to make him best with the pieces that are already around him. You would hope that one of those two second rounders, again, Trapillo, I think is the one that could become a low key defining pick of this draft to see what they're able to squeeze out of him. I said this yesterday, I left Saturday night feeling, and day three of the draft is day three of the draft, so I don't want to overstate this, but it just felt like a day of shrugs. It was like, yeah, fast linebacker, okay, UTSA corner, all right, you know, RB22 in round seven, could probably miss the boat a little bit on a really good running back class there. And so I didn't really feel like day three provided much of an adrenaline rush to the conversation that you're having here about guys that will be playoff team contributors.
I want to talk to you about Kyle Manungai because I feel like this is the big mystery. Obviously, you hear the stories of seventh round running backs having great careers. And I wonder just sort of what it takes to evaluate a running back's transition into the NFL. And it feels like it's a hard thing to do, and it's all based on the situation that they come into in the NFL. Your evaluation of Kyle Manungai, and is this someone that you think could potentially contribute on this Bears roster?
Well, let me start here before we get to Kyle, because I did ask Ryan Poles a question late Saturday evening about the running backs portion of the draft board sort of dancing away from
great
them all
question
weekend.
Dan.
And I just felt like, you know, through the week, you had this Thursday buzz about Ashton Jeanthe potentially becoming a Bear. You had hopes on Friday that maybe Trevian Henderson would be there when you picked. You went into day three with a whole bunch, a dozen or more of the top 20 consensus running backs in the draft still available. And then you left with RB22. And so I don't think this was the best case scenario for the Bears in the backfield, right? I think they had grander dreams, and drafts are like that sometimes. They can be pretty fickle and pretty cruel. And at the running back position, it was kind of cruel to the Bears. They weren't able to make happen what they thought could happen. So now, Kyle Manungai, you've got a guy that comes in, by all accounts, is really, really tough, really, really driven, a high character guy. He's going to squeeze every last drop of potential out of his NFL journey. You just have to figure out where that potential takes you. And I think in the short term, Ben Johnson's got to figure out how does that fit in with their running backs room now? We know Swift is the current starter. They may go shopping on the veteran free agent market here soon to try to add to that room. You've got Roshan, Travis Homer, Ian Wheeler still around. So there's a lot of things that have to play out just for Kyle Manungai to get a longer look and the reps that he needs to show them that he can be a player that can be part of their program for the long term.
Let's stay on the running back position for a moment. You got a Cleveland radio station bidding Nick Chubb farewell and mentioning the NFC North team that he's reportedly has an agreement with. You've got maybe J.K. Dobbins on the move out in L.A. You've got Breece Hall, the subject of rumors in New York. Any of those make sense to you, Dan? Do you expect the Bears to be active trying to figure out what to do and how to add a veteran running back to the mix?
Yeah, I think you'd add like Jeff Wilson, maybe Cam Akers to that list. You know, guys that are out there and looking for work. They've got to figure out what they want to do, you know, and like I say, I think this week is the time to step back from what you thought would have been your best case scenarios in the draft, and then what is reality, and try to reevaluate, okay, what are the positions we need to go after right away? I would think that running back is going to convince them to be active and at least looking for partners that might be willing to come in. You just got to feel out the fit, David. And I'm not sure right now, because a lot of those guys you mentioned are either old and hurt or old or hurt, or, you know, there's a lot that goes into being a running back still on the street in late April. And so they've got to feel that out and figure out what makes sense for them, with an understanding that, look, like, sometimes you just don't address every position to the highest level of your ability in an offseason, and you just got to wait a year before you get what you ultimately wanted at the position.
Dan, David is a little worked up about the depth at safety right now,
sure.
Which is totally valid. But I think just listening to Dennis Allen talk about the way he maybe plans to move players around. Dave Wanstead was on this program talking about potentially Tyreek Stevenson maybe playing a little safety. Obviously, Kyler Gordon, Dennis Allen told us he thought about maybe using him at safety a little bit. Where do you assess the depth at safety on this roster?
I wanted more. Yeah. One of my favorite players in the draft was Xavier Watts from Notre Dame. I thought that would have been a fun pick either late on day two, and I don't think he made it to day three.
But
that was one of those ones where when they owned the 72nd pick and if they had kept it, you're like, okay, that feels really good there. But yeah, I mean, you're talking about Kevin Byard, you know, veteran captain that's still going to be there. We have no idea how many games Jaquan Brisker is going to give you in 2025. Elijah Hicks has been dependable when it called into duty as an emergency starter. Owens, probably you want him to be more of a special teams guy for you. I don't love the depth at safety. Mm-hmm. And so if they want to experiment, I think one of the coolest things that we have to do over these next 3 months is figure out what Dennis Allen likes to do and how he likes to do it with the pieces that he has now, because you hear a lot of talk about how this defense is going to be different and they're going to play in a different way and they're looking for these traits, these positions. Now we have to kind of see it with our eyes and how each guy fits.
Dan, we got a minute left, but if you were to assess big picture, whether Ryan Poles, if he were honest with himself, finished this draft with more regret or satisfaction, where would you answer?
I mean, that's a good question, because I do think that the round two pick is a tough one, because I do think that they would have loved to have Trevion Henderson in that position. And I think there's a alternate world where a simulation gave them Kelvin Banks and Trevion Henderson instead of Colston Loveland and Luther Burden. And I think they might have been happier with that. That's not reality. And so you have to kind of make the best with what you have. It remains to be seen. These draft classes take 3-4 years to evaluate. I think they got some things done. And then again, we'll go back to the Trapillo conversation, because I do think that's low key one of these picks that is going to be very, very pivotal to which direction the Bears go from here. And so we'll kind of see how he develops and whether he's able to claim a starting role by opening day.
Great stuff, Dan. Can't wait to have you on next time where you can grade the 2022 NFL draft.
Yeah. In 3 years, call me. We'll grade the draft.
Thanks, Dan.
Dan Weider from the Chicago Tribune and the Take the North podcast with our guy, Mark Grody. And you can download that on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Coming up next, Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. Yeah. It's our weekly chat with Mike. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully this morning. We love our opportunity every Tuesday to talk to Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com. And today, Mike joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, new tires for spring, Aturo.com. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Morning, Mike.
Good. I prefer the way that Mully introduces me, because he says it's always a pleasure. And every time he says it, it sounds sarcastic.
Well, it is always our pleasure. You know, it
always
is not sarcastic.
Always a delight.
It's a real pleasure to talk to him.
The most sincere welcome that we can manage and muster. But thanks, Mike. Appreciate you joining us this morning. Let's start with the cringy CBS News interview with Bill Belichick and how that is being received around the league and what damage, if any, that might do to his legacy or chances of returning to the league if he wanted to.
I believe he clearly wants to come back to the NFL and continue his pursuit of Don Shula's all-time wins record. Also, Andy Reid is quietly catching Bill Belichick. I think that for as long as he's in his current relationship, and this is always difficult for me because I respect someone's personal life, but they have an obligation to keep their personal life separate from their professional life. When the personal life crosses over to the professional life, like it is here,
right,
then I think it becomes fair game. When she calls herself the VP of Bill Belichick Productions, a company that doesn't even exist, when she's directly involved in sending and receiving emails to North Carolina football staff when she's not employed by North Carolina football, and there's other stuff too. The worst thing that's happened to Belichick this week is TMZ sinking its teeth into this bone. Because you can just tell from the tone of the item they wrote yesterday about Jordan Hudson reportedly storming out of the CBS interview and delaying it for 30 minutes. You can tell that they are on this now. Oof. And they are looking for more. And they're going to find it, because I've been hearing stuff for weeks now. There's plenty out there for them to chase down.
Ooh, if I know anything about Bill Belichick, it's that he doesn't like a distraction. So that's going to be interesting. Mike, I wanted to ask you.
He is the distraction.
Right, right. No, you're right. Absolutely. I was going to change the subject, but if you have more to say, please.
No. I know. He is exactly the guy, yeah. Ruthie. He's exactly the guy that he would have mocked just 2 years ago.
Right.
He would have ridiculed this. You've got a firewall that you need to set up between your football team and the rest of the world. And he's torn that firewall down. And he's become that guy that he would have pointed at and laughed at when he was coaching the Patriots. That's what makes it so amazing.
So true. So true. Mike, I was going to ask you about the Shedeur Sanders sort of fall. And I just wanted to get your take and what you're hearing about what happened.
I think it's as simple as this. Now, there are multiple factors, but at the end of the day, he wasn't good enough to treat the draft process the way his dad did. And Dion tells a great story about showing up for a meeting with the Giants back in 1989, and they dropped this huge binder in front of him, this long test they had their prospects take. And he looked at it and he said, when do you guys pick? When we pick 18th. Well, I'm going to be long gone by the time you guys pick. I don't have time for this. And he left. And I think Shadur had some of that same attitude. The problem is Shadur doesn't have the same talent. Shadur's not a generational, once-in-a-lifetime type of a player. So, and when you throw in the fact that he's a quarterback, you know, these guys, they're up on the whiteboard. They have to take it seriously. They have to show that they can be locked in, that they're going to be the guys who show up early, stay late, put in all the work, check all the boxes. I think that is, more than anything else, what caused teams to regard him as not a serious person as it relates to the quarterback position in the NFL. And then once he falls beyond the rounds that would suggest he's going to be a starter walking through the door, then it becomes, is he going to be more of a distraction than he's worth as a backup? Because we're going to have reporters rush through the locker room, rush past our starter and go straight to Shadur. Do we really want that on our team? So I think it's a variety of factors, but at the core, Deion was able to be very nonchalant about the pre-draft process. Shadur isn't good enough to treat it the same way Deion did.
And yet he's now at a franchise, Mike, has five quarterbacks, but when you have five, do you really have one? He conceivably could be a guy that emerges. I don't know. I know Joe Flacco was there, but Joe Flacco is your backup. Could Shadur Sanders start a game for the Browns in 2025?
Absolutely. Look, Deshaun Watson will not be on the roster this year. He'll be on the physically unable to perform list, and I think he'll stay there all year. They've got this significant insurance policy that will pay them millions because of Watson's inability to play this year due to his second torn Achilles tendon. I don't think he's on the 53-man roster at any point this season, if he isn't even is ever again. So that leaves us with four. I think Kenny Pickett gets cut or traded at some point. It's going to be hard for them to move on from Flacco because he's a fan favorite. I could see it being Flacco, Dylan Gabriel, and Shadur Sanders on the 53-man roster. I guess in theory, Dylan Gabriel could still be traded. Maybe a team needs him due to injury. Maybe he lights it up in the preseason. But if he lights it up, why would you want to trade him? He's great insurance against Shadur Sanders not working out. And it got to push Shadur Sanders. But I'm with you. You start the season with Flacco. You see how he does. And the moment it feels like you're slipping out of contention or Flacco has a four-interception game, if Shadur's ready to go, you put him out there and you see what happens. And you may have stolen a starting quarterback at pick number 144.
Mike, we had a minute left, but when you look at what the Ravens did in drafting Mike Green in the second round, he dropped because of the sexual assault allegations against him, never had charges, but there were whispers and character concerns caused him to drop. You have the franchise that is dealing with the Justin Tucker issue with the history of Ray Rice in its background, drafting Mike Green. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I think if the Ravens were able to comfortably draft Mike Green, I'm assuming they did their homework and they got to the bottom of the allegations and they decided at the end of the day that this is defensible and that they can move forward and that it's not going to add to this current vibe. Now, you could argue, even if you do the full investigation and you conclude everything's fine, it's just the mere fact that that cloud is hanging is trouble enough for the Baltimore Ravens. But from a football standpoint, you know, I think this is why the Browns took Shadur Sanders. There's a point where you're looking at your board and your best available is far and away above the next guy. There's a point where you just got to take the guy. And I think that's what the Browns did with Sanders. And I think it's what the Ravens did with Green.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us today and your time. And I mean that sincerely.
Thanks, always Mike. A pleasure.
Thanks, Mike.
Always a pleasure indeed. Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com. Interesting stuff there with the Ravens and what they're doing and the decision. Mike Green is a first-round talent.
Yeah.
Dropped to the second because of those allegations he alluded to. Did the Ravens do more research than other teams, or they just feel like they're in a position they can take more of a risk?
And is Justin Tucker still on the roster?
They drafted a kicker. They drafted a kicker.
But he's still on the roster.
Yes, he's still on the roster. Mm-hmm. Are they still investigating him?
I imagine.
Yeah, you know, I would imagine that. Do you think he will?
I got a yucky feeling about it. That's all.
She's Ruthie Polinsky. She's in for Mully today. When we come back, John Heyman from the New York Post and MLB Network will join us. We'll talk baseball. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.